Hi, everyone. In the race for STEM education, one of the challenges that we have is that there's missing millions of students who we think maybe have the opportunity to solve the next big engineering problem or to solve diseases, but they just don't get the opportunity. In fact, we know from statistics that there are about 6 million students in the U.S. who are identified as being gifted, but of course, from one district to another, they might have some resources or none at all, depending upon what the resources are available in that particular district or that particular state. That's one of the challenges that we have with gifted education. We're going to be talking today about how one district in the state of Ohio is trying to overcome those challenges by providing students with a consistent focus on gifted education. This is going to be in Chillicothe City Schools, and we're excited to be live in the studio today.
Welcome to Teaching Matters, a podcast exploring all things teaching and learning. Teaching Matters is produced by NPR affiliate WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio. And here is your host, Dr. Scott Titsworth, Dean of the Scripps College of Communication at Ohio University.
Thanks so much, Trinity. Joining me today are two teachers from Chillicothe City Schools. I have Lindsay Burns and Chelsea Herbert. Both of them are intervention gifted coordinators in the city schools of Chillicothe. They run an X-Site program that we'll be talking about. I want to thank both of you for being actually driving over. It's exciting to have people live in the studio. Thanks for coming over and thanks for giving us your time on being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us today.
We're happy to be here.
So I want to start just by learning about the two of you. Maybe could both of you just talk about what your journey was getting into education in the first place? How did you get there? And why did you choose to become a gifted intervention specialist? That's sort of a unique focal point. Why are you doing that? Sure. Lindsay, do you want to start?
Sure. So I actually am a Chillicothe grad, so I'm excited to be back at the district and working for the district that I graduated from. I'm actually an OU grad. My undergrad is in middle childhood education, math and science focus. So I taught in Washington Courthouse and then in Chillicothe. And then I left my full-time teaching position to go to Ohio State and earn my PhD in teaching and learning. I work for NASA as a contractor for their Office of STEM Engagement. And then I 3 years ago was able to come back to Chillicothe for this gifted position. Gifted education has always been really important to me. I was a student of the gifted program at Chillicothe, and then my kids have been a part of the program. But I also think in addition to that, it's important for me to just provide opportunities for our students who need an extra challenge or might just think a little bit differently than some of our other kids. So it's important to have those opportunities for our students.
Yeah, Chelsea?
I'm an OU grad also. I have a Bachelor of Specialized Studies degree that I got down here in Athens. I went back to Chillicothe and realized there wasn't a lot that I could do with that degree, so I started substitute teaching and fell in love with being in the classroom, wished that I had done education to begin with, so I went back on the Chillicothe branch and finished all those classes and started at Chillicothe 12 years ago. I taught 10 years of first grade. No, yes, 10 years. There's 2 years of kindergarten in there somewhere. But then I was getting the gifted clusters of kids in the first grade, and so I was naturally getting more interested in like trying to take my like continuing education classes based on those. Lindsay took the position the year before I started, and now we just get to do all the fun things all the time.
Yeah. So Lindsay, back to you. The audience maybe isn't familiar with Chillicothe other than hearing about it during presidential elections, right? Can you kind of set the stage for the listeners about what the community of Chillicothe is like and what sort of population your district serves?
Sure. So Chillicothe is the first and third capital of Ohio, so we have that that claim to fame. The population of Chillicothe is around just over 20,000, around 22,000 people. But Ross County, where Chillicothe is located, is the third largest county in area in the state of Ohio. And so we actually have 7 school districts in the county. And some of the school districts are kind of close together. So, but our school district, the city schools, serves approximately 2,600 students, pre-K through 12. Our buildings are currently, we have a primary building, K-2, an intermediate building, 3-6, and then a 7 through 12 building. We are re-grade banding next year, so our preschool will move into our primary building, second grade is moving to the intermediate, and then our sixth graders will go back to like a more typical middle school setting, so we'll have 6-8 and then 9-12. But approximately 200 kids per class.
And Chelsea, the two of you obviously are the intervention gifted coordinators. How large is that population of students that you're serving? And my understanding is that your lab, the Excite Lab, as you were saying before we started recording, is actually in the intermediate school mm-hmm. that serves that entire K-12 population. Is that right?
Yeah. So I've 3-6 right now, we get to spend a little bit more time with those mm-hmm. kids because we pull them during something called their personalized learning period. Mm-hmm. Because we have a huge push for individualized education, which is the whole point of our job and right. everybody's job, really. But we also travel to the primary, and we bring the kids over, and they get to see the Excite Lab and all of our cool, you know, 3D printers and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what you guys get to do in a couple years. And it's just, we, 7 through 12, we do a lot with, like, their placements for advanced classes, and it's just... It's amazing, I think, what we can do early.
We have 387 students.
Sorry, that was the whole
thing. Yeah, no, that's okay. 387 students, K-12, that are identified superior COG, specific academic ability, or VPA, which is visual and performing arts.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, as you think about sort of the entire spectrum of the K-12 population of students, this is kind of a weird question, but are there any bubbles, or is it pretty uniform from one cohort of students to the next?
I would say it stays pretty uniform. We do have a couple of grade levels who have more students identified in the visual and performing arts. So just like mm-hmm. a more musically inclined group or more visual art inclined group. VPA identifications are fairly new. Mm-hmm. So we just started that 2 years ago. So that's kind of a new one for us. And then the state provides how we identify students. So they provide the list of tests that we're allowed to use for identification. And then districts who administer those tests are required to then use them for identification. Mm-hmm. So those tests change though every year. So we've had some changes over the last couple of years. Like, we haven't changed the tests that we give, but the tests that are approved have been changed. So we do see a little bit of change that, you know, that way when mm-hmm. the tests change. But I would say predominantly K-12, it stays pretty uniform. We definitely have more identifications in specific academic ability, which would be reading, math, science, or social studies. But we give those assessments more often. So yeah. Like we catch kids as they move through. So anyway.
So the Excite Lab, is that part of the overall gifted program, or is the Excite program sort of, it's one and the same?
It's part of the program.
Yeah, it's part of it.
Do you want to talk about some of the opportunities that students have when they are in the Excite program mm-hmm. specifically?
Sure. We do a lot of different things. We do something called PACE courses, where the kids get to explore. Help me with the acronym. We really like acronyms.
Personalized Acceleration and Career Exploration. Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning of the year, they fill out a Google form, and we'll tell them, like, you can learn about anything. What do you mm-hmm. want to learn about? And we create kind of a curriculum for them to work on independently that might have, you know, research skills and just different areas that they can explore. We try to tie in career somehow. Mm-hmm. There's usually a project at the end that they can work on. So we do that. This year we rolled out foreign language. So, and if you've never been in a classroom where 30 third graders have their headphones on and one is like learning Greek and one is learning French, and that's something we're really looking forward to bringing in a little more. Uh-huh. It's kind of just a thing they can also do independently. We do a lot of 3D printing projects. We do book clubs and this is something that the teachers in their classrooms facilitate, but I've written book club, like every week they do different things, and then that also like ties into something that they're doing in our class. So that keeps the teachers involved in what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And let's see, there's so many things that we do.
Yeah, so the Excite Lab kind of spans, like, it's part of our gifted program, but we've been really intentional about we're gifted services and talent development. So not all of the students that walk into the lab necessarily have a formal identification, but we have identified students who need a little something extra, or they have an interest that we can help support. So we've also created, as part of the Excite Lab, the Fab Lab. Fab, short for fabrication. And it's basically, it's all one big room. We basically have two classrooms where the middle wall, they're movable. We just have it open all the time. So we basically have two classrooms. But the one side has 7 3D printers. And so we're part of the Ohio Code Scholars Program, which is something facilitated through Southern State, but we we needed something to support attendance because of being on the report card and those sorts of things. So we came up with this crazy idea where we have different groups of students. We have a catalog group, orders, production, promo, and then like packaging and delivery. And so the students created a catalog of things of 3D printers, 3D printed items. And then we, for every week, students who have perfect attendance just for the week, because we were trying to like make the goals kind of smaller. So perfect attendance for the week, we pull 10 names per grade level per week, and the students, their names are announced during lunch. They get to come over and pick something out of the catalog. And then we have our orders team who takes all the orders, and they type everything into a Google form, and then the production team comes in every Monday morning and they start all the prints, and then we package them up and deliver them every week. And then we have a stat squad who is they come in and look at all the data, and they're like tracking attendance, they're tracking how much like filament we're using, the cost of that, the things. So this is something we just started just in the last few months actually, as part of the lab, but it's not necessarily a gifted service, but part of our talent development and supporting the building as a whole.
So Chelsea, I know that robotics is also a part of this. How do you all specifically sort of introduce robotics at different, you know, developmental levels?
Code scholars, I would say. Yeah. The project that we do with Southern State, we 3D print. This year it's like a droid head, and there's all of this robotic stuff that we're taking the kids through step by step, and they're programming their robots, and then we take them middle of May down there, and they get to we make little videos, but they get to do kind of like a showcase and go to some like breakout sessions about it. Yeah. So
where's it located?
Hillsboro.
Oh, cool.
So, and they also, middle school has a robotics club that does it also. We don't have a lot to do with that, but our kids go from us to them.
Yeah.
So reframing some of what I've just heard, so you've got very STEM-oriented things like the robotics with coding. You were talking about what I would say is data, you know, analysis and science. Going to the other end of that spectrum, what are some of the things that you do for the arts and the STEAM part of everything?
Sure. So our visual and performing arts students, so we have our instrumental music, and like, so I'll start with music. So we have band, orchestra, choir, opportunities for our students. All of our students in the intermediate building take like general music in our primary building. We had a traveling group come in around Christmas time, Christmas with the Celts. And so they actually invited a group of our students from Chillicothe to perform with them. So we offered that opportunity to those students. For our visual arts students, we're working on for next year having a guest artist come in like maybe once a quarter and do some kind of a guided art project with those students. For theater, we have a lot of different options. Our theater teachers and our thespian group are really active, and we actually just hosted the state thespian conference a couple of weeks ago. So our theater students have lots of opportunities there. We also have a really active community theater, and a lot of our students are involved with that. And then with dance, we had an opportunity. One of our students participates in the Dayton Ballet Nutcracker, and so she was actually able to go over to our primary building and perform for those students and talk to them about the Nutcracker around Christmas time. So we just try to provide, the opportunities kind of change for our VPA students, but with their PACE courses, a lot of the students pick something related to their visual or performing art that they enjoy, so we're able to write those PACE courses. We noticed a lot of those students chose, the foreign language that they chose was based on our dance student chose French because she does French with ballet. So we're able to kind of not just their art, but the things that are connected to them as well.
So if I'm a student, let's say I'm one of the high school students, just to sort of narrow it down, as I'm interacting with your program, how does that sort of fit into my daily or weekly schedule? In other words, what's the cadence for interacting with your programs, you know, over the course of a week or a time period for a student?
Well, so high school, our middle school and high school students right now, we have an advanced curriculum for them. So their classes, they're in the advanced or honors program. They can participate in CCP courses through OUC. We have six is a little bit different.
Right. K-6, I feel like they see us, well, maybe not K2. K2 right now, because we're just not housed in the same building, they're right. Usually monthly. We call it Cavalier Quest, and we bring them over, and they've got little drawstring backpacks, and I pick out a book that goes with whatever our theme is. Like last month we did Ocean Rescue, so we were learning all about like plastic cleanup in the ocean, and they took a wild robot book home, and they have this little binder, and at the end of the year we're going to do like some take-home activities for them to do over the summer. We, 3-6, like I said, we pull them during their personalized learning period, usually about once a week. Our schedule changes weekly. The kids are very fast to remind us of when's Excite Lab this week, you know. But we get them for about 30 minutes. We're starting to try to schedule them a little bit more individually, especially for our Code Scholars project. It's mm-hmm. just easier to, you know, help 3 kids wire a robot compared to 30 that are, you know, 2 of us are helping. And when I say us, I mean Lindsay, because she's the one that really does all the robotic stuff. But it's really interesting to see them just kind of like 2-3 ratio versus mm-hmm. like all 30 of them at the same time. But so basically we see them about once a week. We see them in the hallway all the time. And like, you know, we like to check in on our kids and see what they're reading and see what they're working on and talk to their classroom teachers. How are things going there? So we're definitely more visible in that building for sure. But I think we've done a good job of kind of integrating ourselves into the primary. It'll be even better next year when we have the second graders. But they see us all the time. We get to do a little bit of everything.
The companion question to this is, what is your cadence like? So over the course of a school day, you know, how many students do you have inside your room or what's your day like, you know, in general?
Yeah, so day to day we have between 30 and 60 kids per day coming through the lab. And sometimes more, depending on if we happen to be pulling like multiple Fab Lab groups the same day that we're pulling our Excite Lab students, like our gifted students, then that it could be closer to 100. Mm-hmm. And then if we're in the other building, so we're also responsible for all of the testing. So anytime we get testing requests or anything like that, or individualized testing, like we're also responsible for all of that. So it just kind of depends on what we're working on. And then we also kind of, we laugh and say we should also have special projects on our title as well, because we come up with these crazy ideas. But our next big one is something we've been working on a lot in the last few weeks. We're getting an igloo, an immersive classroom. So my dissertation was about defining immersiveness in mm-hmm. education settings. And when I taught STEM at Chillicothe Middle School, I kind of designed the class around 2 major things, the ocean and space. And so the first day of school, this was 2017, one of my kids raised his hand, and this is great, Mrs. Burns, but I've never even seen the ocean. And I was like, oh shoot, okay. Mm-hmm. And so I like walked myself straight down to district office, and I'm like, I've got to take these kids to the ocean. Like, how can I? And so I was able to like grants and raise all the money, and we took the kids to Assateague Island and they got to see the ocean, and it was the most amazing moment of my career. And so ever since then, this idea of creating opportunities for our students, like I had 8 kids out of the 52 that went with us. We had 8 that had never left the state of Ohio. I mean, I had, you know, so even more than that had never seen the ocean. And so this idea of creating an opportunity for immersive experience and application of what they're learning. And so anyway, we had this big dream, and so it was funded through private donation. And so we were able to work that out, and it's being installed in August.
So igloo, what are you gonna do with that?
So it's a 20-foot cylinder. We were able to get, it'll be full surround and floor projection. And so the idea is Chelsea and I are going to train the staff to be able to use it in their day-to-day lesson implementation. But the idea is for them to, so for example, we have 6th grade daughters that are in the building right now, and they read Percy Jackson. And so we just have this vision of them sitting in Athens, Greece, like while they're, you know, studying about Greek mythology, or obviously the Artemis launch and mm-hmm. return was a big topic at school over the last few weeks. And so this idea of showing the kids what it's like to be in space and having, you know, and so we did a lot with the, we've done a lot with ocean, like with Cavalier Quest, like we have these different themes each month for our K2 students. So putting them in that situation where they can experience what it's like to be in some of these places that we've talked. We did bridge building maybe 3 months ago. We talked a lot of, the book was about the building of the Golden Gate Bridge. And so mm-hmm. like But to them, San Francisco and California, like, so, but giving them the opportunity to visualize what that would be like all the way around. And then there's also some really unique opportunities with just the Igloo itself in terms of career training and those sorts of things.
How many students can fit inside of it at one time?
So the 20-foot one should hold a one of our classes altogether. Wow. So 20 to 22, 24 students.
And I assume it's just a bunch of LED screens around.
So it's actually projectors. All projected.
Oh, it's all projected.
Yep. So there's four projectors for the walls around and then two for the floor.
That's really cool. Huh.
Yeah.
And so are there particular foci for the Igloo that you're excited about?
I think we have so many ideas that we probably couldn't narrow down, like what, but just locations, things like that, going places. We've talked about how it's kind of like the magic school bus. Like if you're learning about the cell, let's go into a cell. And because our district is so STEM focused, we have a STEM designation in our K-2 building. Like it's just going to naturally just fit into so much of our curriculum. Like we've got a first grade team that does pollinators. They're like, we're going to go in a beehive. And we're like, I just think it's going to be amazing to see those kids like experience those things. You know, like they think VR goggles are cool, but they're going to be in wherever they are.
Yeah, we actually do a lot of stuff with like 360 video in the goggles and do it for like law enforcement training on like de-escalation techniques. And so very familiar with that. But the idea, you know, the drawback of the headsets obviously is that people are isolated from one another and you can't interact with a partner or another student. Whereas put them in the Igloo and let them go, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty cool.
I'll get to experience it together.
We're excited to get to watch them watch each other too, I think, just to see how excited they'll get.
I'm sorry this became a interesting rabbit hole for me too, but like, where do you get the content for it? Are you able to create it yourself?
So when we first started exploring this idea, one of the things that was really important for us is teacher usage, right? And so the idea, we want them to feel efficacious in using it. We want them to feel like we don't want them to feel like, oh, I can't do that because I don't know how to create the content. So we actually will have plug and play for like our operating systems on our laptop. So they can actually take anything that they've already created in terms of slide presentations or anything like that and put it up. There are also a lot of different like open source free things, YouTube 360, like there's a lot of different, I can't list them all because I honestly don't know off the top of my head, but there are many. We've talked about those. But we also have two computers, so there will be one computer that's in the Igloo running it that you can use, and we actually also were able to get a second computer that will run the software. And there are multiple different softwares that can be used to create things that can go into the Igloo. One of them is one of the gaming softwares that our high school students have a class on. So we're actually hoping to have some connections and collaborations with that class of our high school students and our teachers. So our teachers can be like, hey, we really want something on, you know, all of our fifth graders do this. And then hopefully our high school students will be able to kind of help out and help us to create things. We're going through some trainings and I think it will definitely evolve. But we want it to feel natural to use. And so the plug and play feature was important to us so that our teachers could take things that they already have or things that already exist and they can just utilize those. But
that's really cool. I'll come back to that after we get done taping. I have like,
sorry. Yeah. We like kind of went down the rabbit hole,
but it's great to hear, you know, what's cool about that part of the conversation though, is that we're getting to see an idea sort of at still the inception stage that you're already envisioning how it's going to expand possibilities. And so that means you have to come back next year and I'm going
to
be on sabbatical next year. So I can come spend
come,
the whole,
yeah. Yeah. Come see it.
Let me switch gears back to the overall program. So, you know, in hearing you talk about how the program is structured and how you have students come into the lab and everything, it sounds to me like there is an interesting balance between students coming in and kind of doing their own independent learning and then also taking part in group projects. How do you as the specialists and teachers sort of balance that so that students can pursue their own rabbit holes, but then at the same time, you also sort of meet broader objectives of STEM and performing arts, you know, advancement?
Yeah, I would say the cool thing we've been able to do this year is the collaborative projects that the students are working on that we we kind of lay out from the beginning that are supposed to be collaborative are connected to like the book studies and like the book clubs that they're doing in the classroom. So we've created projects that relate to the books, or so that they kind of all have a common ground to work from. But then we've also encouraged them as they're working on their PACE courses and they have their individualized things that they want to learn more about to like talk to your neighbor, tell your neighbor something you've learned today about what, you know, what you're interested in and what you're working on. So we've had to teach them to be collaborative, and sometimes they, you know, they take feedback personally sometimes when it's from a peer, or so we've really had to work on how do you work together? How do you like take different roles on the team and those sorts of things. So we've used our collaborative project, kind of prescribed collaborative projects to do that. And then it kind of just kind of melds over into their individualized work, but then they're like, oh, you're doing something similar. Let's, they kind of do that kind of naturally. And then the robotics project, they're all working on the same project, right? But they have the opportunity to, like they each designed, like the dome is the same, but they painted them different and they each have a different idea in mind of what it's gonna look like. And they pick out the different colors of lights, and when they code it, they can, you know, make it turn on at different times or whatever. So they have the opportunity to do things to make it unique, but they've all kind of learned it together. And like our sixth grade group, like this is their second year all of our fifth and sixth graders, they've done it twice now because they did it last year too. So it's been cool to see if we've had new people come in, like how they help each other and teach each other. Collaboration is, you know, something we do have to teach them though, like especially at that younger age level.
I think knowing our students too, like, you know, when a kid, it's just not like, don't put him in that group. That's not, you know, like, but we know them well enough that if he wants to work by himself, like, you go do your thing and these people are going to work on this. And like she said, it just kind of comes naturally. They kind of group up together and do things that we wouldn't have come up with on our own.
Well, and I think we've kind of let go of the idea too, that like, we've let go of complete control of everything that's happening in the room. Like, they're not all necessarily working on the same thing at the same time. And that's just how, like, they come in and they know, like, okay, guys, we've got these three projects everybody's working on. Like, pick what you need to do and get that done. And they just do it now. But it didn't start out that way, but it is now. You know, we've worked to that point.
And as a classroom teacher, I never could have done. Like, it was really hard to give up that control. Like, but it's almost like they're learning more. Like, when we're not, like, we need to do this and this and this, and you need to sit there and you need to be quiet when you're not. Once you let go, it's great.
Sitting and listening to the conversations that these kids have, I mean, some of it is just, it's just unbelievable. The thing, it's just really, really cool. We have really, really awesome jobs.
So as I think about that, are there, you know, you've both been doing this for a while now, and have you started to see particular interest areas emerge as being something that, you know, I'm trying to think about examples of something that maybe wouldn't have been on students' radar, you know, a handful of years ago, but now is starting to sort of take over their interest?
I think the 3D printing, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And I don't know if that just naturally happened because they go in there and they see them and like, oh, these things are so neat. And they watch them run. Like, we want to do something with this. But I mean, in as many STEM opportunities as our kids get, like, they don't get like extended project time like they do with us. So creating the Fab Lab, bringing in all those kids for talent development that aren't necessarily our identified kids, like, it's really almost caused just like a boom of interest in 3D printing. I'm learning how to do it. Like, I didn't know anything about it before last year, and we'll have students come in all the time and I'll be like, oh man, this one's messing up. And be like, Mrs. Herbert, all you have to do is pull the app up and hit that. Like, they know more about it now than we do. So I think we're all learning from each other.
Do they like to print?
Like fidget spinners. That's actually what started the whole thing, is we did like a test print when we set them up for Code Scholars, and she sat at her desk and spun this thing until she drove me a little crazy. She goes, oh, we need to print these for people. Like, and it just snowballed from there, like all of our other crazy ideas do. But it's a big thing.
Lindsay, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think gamification and like video games are obviously for many, not all of our students, but for many of our students, something that they have experience with. So I will definitely say we've seen when they get to pick, right, they want to focus on anything. There's a lot of like Minecraft, Roblox, but it's this like creation of these worlds. And so we've definitely seen an uptick in like coding. I think that's been definitely an interest for a lot of people. But we've also tried to help students find a way to make an impact. So we talk a lot about what can you work on or study that's gonna make an impact for people. And so one of our collaborative projects this year was about choosing something that would positively impact your school or community. And so some of the stuff these kids, I mean, they were so creative. And so I think too, one of the things that's really important for us is giving kids an opportunity to just take a minute to think and be creative and what if, you know, instead of prescribing it to them. And Chillicothe, we've spent a lot of time building the STEM program from not having STEM at all to having the first Chillicothe Primary was the first elementary school designated for STEM in the state. So like we've led the way with that, and it's created thinkers who think in that way. How can I create something, and then how can I make it better, and how can it be used to make an impact? And so I think we're trying to also do that with our students too, like letting them have the time to think and be creative and come up with ideas that somebody might say are crazy, and we're like, hey, we come up with crazy things all the time. And then so it's just been, that's been good. They've leaned into things that are maybe a little different, or like, wow, I didn't think that would be possible, but I'm willing to try to, you know.
So. Like if something in my house breaks, my daughter just takes it apart and figures it out. I'm like, you can tell she goes to a STEM school. Like I would have just bought a new one, whatever, you know. Yeah, but it's really interesting to see how we've changed the way kids learn and the way they think.
So obviously Chillicothe has, you know, an objective that sounds like it's district-wide of having this focus. What caused that culture to develop? I mean, you said just a minute ago that it went from not being really there to now it sounds like it's a major focus. That takes a lot of commitment on the part of faculty. It takes a commitment on the part of administrators, the community. What caused that? I mean, how did that happen over the course of what sounds like a relatively short period of time in the biggest scheme of things?
Yeah, we had some administration and some teacher leaders that just really got behind it and really felt like it was going to be impactful for our kids. And they just didn't give up. They just kept working at it. And it is crazy to think about the number of people it takes to to run STEM for the entire student body. Like our entire K-2 building, every kid gets it. And we're actually working on STEM designation for our 3-6 building. So like every kid, it does take a lot of just commitment. And that's what it was. It was some teacher leaders and some administration who just refused to give up on it. And then the community got behind it. And now we have people coming in saying, we want our kids to have that STEM education. So it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you notice in the community, so outside the school, is there a recognition of the STEM orientation that community members understand?
Yeah. And I think there's like an expectation of it now.
Yeah.
Like that people know that that's, you know, but it's important to us and it's important to the kids. And like, I mean, like Chelsea said, our girls have grown up with it. And so now that's the way they think and they talk. And, you know, we laugh when we hear them say it's part of the engineering design process or something. Yeah, yeah. And we're like, okay, you know. So, yeah, I think the community, it's just who we are now. And the community knows that.
Yeah. Well, they also know that those are the kids that are going to grow up and work in these industries. And our curriculum director's favorite tagline to say about everything, that, I mean, she was a big ringleader for STEM and
most
definitely ringleader's not even the right word for that, but she likes to tell people that these kids are going to have jobs that don't even exist yet.
Yeah.
Like, you look at how much education's changed since we started 10, 12 years ago. Like, you teach completely different. You can't teach the way that you did. So the fact that Chillicothe is willing to just set the standard and, like, keep pushing, I think people really recognize us for that.
I mean, I feel like problem solving, creativity, and communication. If students can master those things, they're going to have a great, you know, opportunity in front of them. So, so Chelsea, kind of switching gears a little bit, you know, Lindsay was describing the fact that teachers throughout the district have to be a part of this STEM orientation. In your role as a, you know, gifted coordinator, are there certain practices that you find to be effective or necessary even in a line of communication between yourself and then the grade or subject matter teachers?
Yeah, we have pretty good communication with all of our teachers that have the gifted clusters, and not even just them. Like, you know, we like to work with any of the teachers, even if they don't have any of our kids placed in there. But we do professional development. We try to, you know, send out different things that we might think are interesting. We have a lot of teachers that are like, there's one during her PLP, all of her students come to us. So she comes up too and helps us because she wants to be a part of what we're doing. And I hope that as we move on, like, we'll get a lot more of that. But I know as being one of those teachers, like, I wanted all the information and all the resources I could get for those kids that were in my class that were, you know, two grade levels above their peers. So I think if they can look at us as a resource and a partner to, you know, make these kids do their absolute best, like, they've been really good about that.
No, I mean, I think we, just like Chelsea said, we've worked really hard to create partnerships with the teachers. So it's not, you know, we work together and collaborate to provide opportunities for the kids.
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about, and still my mind is back with the igloo, but like, you know, I was just thinking about the fact that obviously, because of your roles, you're trying to figure out how do we advance learning for a certain, you know, demographic of students that tested into the program or was selected in for talent development. I also think about, you know, the kid that's sitting in a classroom that can't find what the hook is for them, and then maybe something like that opens up a whole world. You know, when I was growing up, it was finding the right book at the library and reading it and going, oh, okay, that's really cool. And, you know, now there's so many other opportunities. I think the last question that I have, and it's one that's a weird one, but I think it's an important one in the broader context of gifted education. I think that, you know, a lot of teachers, a lot of parents, students that might be listening to this go, you two have a dream job. You get great students in your classroom. You get, you know, cool resources to work with them on. And it sounds like it is a dream job. But there are also different types of challenges. So I wondered if the two of you could speak to, and maybe challenges is not the right word, but at the end of the day, you're dealing with kids, and kids are kids, right? And so what are some of the things that as gifted intervention specialists, you have to pay attention to that would be your day-to-day grind, you know, that teachers talk about when they're leaving the building for the day?
I mean, just because we have gifted students doesn't mean we don't have students that have certain behavior issues and things like that. And if anything, I really think our programming helps with that. Like, yes, we have challenges. We'll get a kid that'll come in and we're like, oh, he's a vibe today. Like, that's, we got to figure out something for him to do. But I don't know exactly how to say it. The challenges we face more besides behavior, it is a much smaller problem than probably a classroom teacher deals with, is just teaching them to collaborate, teaching them how to fail, teaching them it's okay to sit there and not know what you're going to do right away. Like, I don't care if you sit for 30 minutes and brainstorm what you're going to do the next time. Like, it's just reteaching them how to process their way through something, really. And they don't like to fail, and they don't like to not get something right the first time, but we get that. We're kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think our students, just because academically things come easily to them doesn't change the fact that they're still a 10-year-old, or they're still an 8-year-old, or they're still a 6-year-old. I mean, they still have this, they still struggle with similar things that their peers do. And I think sometimes we struggle too with, you know, providing enough challenge for them, but helping them to not feel like they have to do extra work, or they're like, we don't want it to feel like a punishment, but you know, they're still responsible for doing the things that are required of them in the classroom. And then, so helping them to, also see the integration of what we're doing and what they're doing in their classes, and how what we're trying to help them work through now will benefit them later. You know, a lot of times our 9-10-year-olds don't see the bigger picture of what, you know, high school coming down the line. Obviously, we know we're not spending our days talking about their high school classes, but trying to help them see the pathway forward into what career they might, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about career exploration and what they might, what truly what their interests are, and not just, you know, I really like to play this sport, or I really like to play this video game, or I really like to do this activity, but how they could see themselves in the future using those interests to pursue their career. And so sometimes, you know, helping them to see that bigger picture and helping them to understand the value of what we're doing day to day, that to them sometimes does seem like extra work or more things that they have to do.
Yeah. It has been awesome getting the chance to meet both of you. It's always great to have Bobcats come back to Athens. And I will take you up on the offer of visiting next year. I think that'd be really awesome. So.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. going in the beginning of August, so once school starts.
We've never been so excited to go back to school early.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest. As teachers, we're also excited about summer break coming up. So.
Oh, yes. But we're like, but August this year, we're not going to, you know, be like, oh, it's time to go back to school. It's going to be like igloos coming. Yeah. So, yeah, we're excited.
Well, best of luck with the end of your academic year and have a great summer. And I'll see you next fall.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My guest today has been Lindsay Burns and Chelsea Herbert. They're both gifted intervention coordinators at Chillicothe City Schools. If you'd like to learn more about this, we'll put a link to Chillicothe City Schools. Does the Excite Lab have a webpage?
We do have a gifted services page, and then they're welcome to email us from there.
Okay, so we'll put a link to that up in the text accompanying the podcast if you'd like to learn more information about this. Thank you for watching and listening. Special thanks to Trinity Sweet and April Koska as the associate producers. And today, because we're in the studio, my friend Chris Stewart is running the video equipment, so I appreciate that, Chris. He's back over there in the corner. So we hope you all have a great day, and take care.